who's now dying of stage 4 liver cancer. You're one of his hospice partners helping Glenn. Marty Stroud, since we talked, has gone to meet and apologize to Glenn Ford directly. And
Marty Ford has apologized to Glenn Ford. Whether or not that apology is anything significant after enduring 30 years of wrongful conviction on death row in solitary confinement.
And the state still refuses to compensate
him financially. So he's completely underinsured. His medical care is a combination of volunteers like myself who are incredibly honored to be able to serve and work with Glenn, and then basic care from the state.
Well, Jackie Sumel, we will link to your exhibit at the Brooklyn Public Library that has just opened. The book has just come out again, Herman's House. And Frontline is doing a special on Glenn Ford's case tonight. That does it for our broadcast. We're looking to hire a social media producer. That's a full-time job. Go to our website. I'll also be speaking at Colorado College Thursday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. in Colorado Springs. Go to our website for more. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Sarah Mate, Nirmi Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkampani, Masood Robi, Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Ozbeck, Sam Riddell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition, the Radiothon 2015 edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's right, we're taking your pledges today and tomorrow. It's the end of our week, only 1 week a year. Please give us a pledge because, you know, this is something you can't get anywhere else on your radio dial. Local news and information on the WHFR Journal and all kinds of music from independent artists, alternative artists, and a wide variety of styles most of the rest of the week. And so, yes, you really want to pledge. I know you do. You want to support us. We have a lot of special guests this hour. So let me just say the number now, and I'll give it to you twice more. It is 313-845-9676. And that little beep you heard was a special guest arriving in our studio. I'm joined in the studio today by our general manager, Susan McGraw, who has just left the studio for a second because Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr., who's going to be taking up the majority of the hour because he always has so much to tell us about Dearborn, has just arrived. But first, we have a guest from Henry Ford College, our friend in the counseling department, Diane Green, who is the coordinator of the special non-traditional seminars that we've been offering here at the college, either for men or women, considering careers that they wouldn't normally consider that, of course, we happen to, coincidentally, offer programs in. Tell us about the one. This first one, or this one coming up right away, is next Wednesday, April 22nd, which is why we had to get you on to talk about it today. And non-traditional health careers for men. Give us a few details, Diane.
Yes. this program is focused on those careers in nursing and health careers. It is a Perkins-funded program. Perkins has long provided resources to support areas of study that are non-traditional per gender. Mm-hmm. And this particular one is going to be focusing on our health careers and nursing programs here at Henry Ford. We're inviting young men, individuals who are returning to school, to come and look at what we have available here at the college, which is pretty doggone extensive. When you look at our programming ranging from medical assistant, physical therapy assistant, respiratory therapy, radiography, we have nursing, surge tech, ophthalmic technician is probably our newest kid on the block.
Great program. Eyes, right.
Yes,
eyes. I got that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. And then we have our pharmacy tech. We're inviting in, and we've done this the last few years, we're also inviting in high school seniors. Young men who are in their last year, who are trying to sort out what it is they think they might want to do, particularly if they have an interest in health careers or nursing.
Okay, and the times, it's registration Continental Breakfast starts at 7:30 in the morning, 8 o'clock. Student outreach and support, Dr. Brenda Hildreth, your colleague, is going to be giving the, sort of the introduction. And then there's going to be about half an hour or so on each specialty. And one of the great things about these non-traditional health career programs, it's not just the people that work here that teach the programs, but certainly they know best what they teach and are connected to the job market too in the real world, as they call it, but also students from the HSC program giving their insights into the programs that they're currently in or just graduated from.
That really ends up, in my mind, being a very important piece of this experience that we make available. These are the individuals who can really talk about the programs in a much, much more intimate way, not only academically, but also some of the challenges they face as men in careers that are traditionally held by women, but also those issues related to personal challenges and struggles outside of the classroom. And we find that, you know, we have just these wonderful discussions and Q&As that go on between the individuals who are participating in the actual seminar and those students or alums, because we have had alums to come back and talk about that other side of the experience. Yes, I was a student, now I'm gainfully employed, and these are the kinds of things that I'm doing. These are all of the possibilities that are also available to me.
And so the program starts at 7:30 and ends about 1 o'clock. Lunch and prizes too. This is fantastic. Free food and prizes on top of it. Sounds like a WHFR event, doesn't it, Susan?
Yeah. Yeah, I can only hope. Absolutely.
We do stuff like that all the time. As it says on the flyer, admission completely free, open to the public. But as you said, high school students in their last year and their senior year just finishing are certainly welcome to consider. This is especially for men, for areas that maybe they don't have a lot of information about, they hadn't considered at the outset.
Absolutely.
And most of these, all health career programs are challenging, are intense in a variety of ways, because we want to do good things for other people, don't want medical care to be second rate at all, of course, but it nonetheless, there's a great entry-level jobs and even lifetime careers that can come out of
these. Absolutely. The other thing I like to point out, and I always stress this to students who are looking at programs of study within health careers in nursing, make sure the program is accredited. All of Henry Ford's programs are accredited. Upon completing their programs here, students do, in fact, sit for state exams for licensing. Mm-hmm. So those are extra kinds of pieces that allow them to market themselves even more favorably in the workforce. The other thing is, I failed to bring out Chad Austin. We bring him in to talk about that world of work. He promotes his area, the services that he makes available for students to come in for resume writing, dress for success, and the good interviewing tips that they always need going in for those interviews.
Oh, sure, sure.
So, absolutely.
Well, okay, so it is next Wednesday, folks, so spread the word if you know any either current students at HFC or graduating students, men in this case, for this non-traditional health career seminar. It's right here on our main campus. That's 5101 Evergreen Road, just north of Ford Road, in the G building. They made it easy to find our different buildings because every building has its own single letter. We're in the M building, the mature building, I think.
Speak for yourself.
Somehow the Fine Arts Center, where your office is, Susan, as head of telecommunication and journalism, is the F building.
Still.
It got the,
yeah,
it used to be the Fine Arts, well, and it's still the F building.
In fact, I made the request.
Isn't that amazing?
It's I just can't change. It's been too long.
That's right.
Okay, we'll build everything else around that one. So I got lucky.
So it's easy to find. It is called officially the Health Sciences Education Center, but it's Building G on the main campus. Registration 7:30 in the morning at the Hackett Center, Hackett Conference Room in that building, the G building. But we would like you to call in advance if you could. Let people know how many are coming so we have breakfast and lunch for enough people, I guess.
Absolutely.
Brenda Redinger, 313-845. That's the same for all pretty much college numbers. There's a few that aren't, but 313-845-9617. 313-845-9617 to register in advance. Although drop-ins, they're possible.
Oh, we welcome anyone and everyone.
Okay, great. Imagine the possibilities, non-traditional health careers for men, right here at Henry Ford College in our G building. It could stand for G Whiz.
I suppose it
or,
could.
Or golly, this is
golly
great.
G.
Yeah, of course. Oh,
the double G.
There you go.
I'd like to do a survey sometime what people have come up with for that letter in each building.
The problem is we then forget we forget what it stands for, and then we start making things up. And
I know.
Completely.
Don't
That's why the pizza guy keeps delivering to the wrong building on Wednesday nights. So
yeah.
I keep giving him the wrong one.
All these
but
letters.
It's true. Well, I just wanted to mention, Diane, I know how hard you work on putting this together. I know the faculty listed here. These are wonderful, intelligent, educated people that know their business.
Absolutely.
And I know it is put together in such an organized fashion and coordinated, in fact, by you and your team that it is, how can it not be successful? So thank you for your effort in making this available to our community and our students.
And I thank you for your support because you've been a tremendous help in helping us look at creative ways of marketing. So we really appreciate your help as well.
Our pleasure. Good luck.
Thank you.
Come on by next Wednesday morning, April 22nd, Non-Traditional Health Careers for Men, 8 Henry Ford Campus, G Building, 7:30 to 1 o'clock. Great possibilities for careers. So we'll be back in just a second with Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly, Jr. Here's a commentary on the Proposal 1 that's coming up in the May 5th election. We'll be asking Mayor O'Reilly what he thinks would be best for the city of Dearborn in that. And so we'll be right back with him in the chair asking some in-depth questions about what's going on in the city. So stay tuned.
A number of people have been outraged that I haven't announced a constitutional amendment that would raise the sales tax, largely to fix the roads. Well, in a less than perfect world, this is indeed not how legislation should be made. But in a perfect world, you and I would both exercise more and maybe have studied just a little harder in algebra class. Yes, the legislature should have solved this problem, primarily by raising the gas tax, something we would barely notice, especially with the low fuel prices today. Yes, it was wrong to pass the buck to the voters, with a regressive sales tax as the only possible option. But the bottom line is this. If the voters pass Proposal 1 May 5th, there will be significantly more money to fix state and local roads. Probably not enough, but they'll get better. There'll also be a little more money for local governments and the schools, and even some to invest in mass transit. Plus, the working poor would get a much-needed break. The EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, stripped from them earlier in the Snyder administration, would be fully restored. For many, this will make a significant difference. If the voters turn down Proposal 1, none of these good things will happen, at least not for years, and the roads will get worse and worse. Politics really is the art of the possible, and I don't think there's any other rational choice. Polls show, however, that voters are ready to turn this down. They don't understand the ballot proposal and don't trust it. This seems especially true of Democrats. To be sure, many are divided and resentful that they're being asked to carry the Republicans' water on this. One senior party official told me, "No one is giving voice to the primary Democratic objection to this measure. Individuals are increasingly paying more for the cost of government, while corporations are not." This person thinks the business community should have had to give back some of their massive tax breaks to help the roads. Most Tea Party types are also against Proposal 1 because they believe the utterly false claim that you can find money to fix the roads without boosting taxes. However, cooler heads on both sides know better. Proposal 1 has been endorsed by Carl Levin and John Dingell, by the AFL-CIO, the Michigan Environmental Council, and even the Sierra Club. Endorsements don't mean as much to me as explanations, and I turn to an authority I trust, Michigan State University economist Charles Ballard. "I'm voting for Proposal 1, he said. Yes, he agreed the sales tax hurts the poor more, but he added, a lot of low-income Michigan families will see a net increase in their incomes if it passes. And, he added, the poor are paying an even more regressive tax now, what Ballard calls the pothole tax, my name for the car repairs that wouldn't have been necessary if we had decent roads. The bottom line is that we can pass this, or things will continue to get worse for those who can afford at least, with no relief in sight. However you vote, you should do so without illusions.
Wear headphones or no?
Oh, we are here in the studio, and our special guest, John B. O'Reilly Jr., is putting his headphones in place. And this is real radio, folks. We make it up as we go along. That's why you have to make up a pledge and call right now, 313-845-9676. Option two, to get to our office, Valencia, our reception person out there is waiting for your pledge, and she'll give you all the information. Mayor O'Reilly, welcome again. Welcome back to the WHFR Journal.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
I've seen you several times around town, of course, since their last visit here. A lot has been happening. John D. Dingell Transit Center. But today we especially want to go over some details about the State of the City address and then any other late-breaking issues that you might want to bring up, too, as we get time. So now, again, as I introduced her briefly before, our general manager of the station, technically my boss, Susan McGraw is here, so she's watching closely, and she'll jump in, too. Her background is definitely a citizen activist involved with government and a number of committees and activities in Garden City. Which is not called Garden City for nothing, I understand.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. Your State of the City address, I want to tell people, of course, was February 25th, and if they want to listen to it again, I think CDTV has still got the file at thecityofdearborn.org. Our journal show has it included in its entirety, except for the introductions. Sorry, I just had to fit it into the hour, you know. February 27th, so you can go to whfr.fm, click on talk shows, WHFR Journal, February 27th. Okay. First of all, I thought it was interesting that you spent the approach. Usually, State of the City is just talking about what happened in the last year. You look back over the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Because, well, in almost every area, there's clear progress, you know, and you know, progress over the long term is probably more important than ups and downs each year or two. But thank you for using that approach, a little different than before. The Dearborn Administrative Center, that's where, of course, city government is now. You said, we had some bumps in the road, but it's been 5 months since our move, and I'm very happy with how things are going. Bumps?
Oh, no, it just meant that, you know, any time you're working out logistics, you find out things. I mean, this building was only used for 10 years, so it was relatively new, but it had been sitting for almost three. And so we had to learn as we go some just adjustments in terms of we really had to deal with just how to get the right level of heat, air conditioning, well, heat during the winter season, distributed, you know, because our use was a little different than the prior use. Mm-hmm. So those were the kind of things, but all of them worked out. The amazing thing is just the reaction of our customers to the facility. I mean, the number one winners are people who do business with the city, and they love it. They mm-hmm. have one door they go in, and they walk in, and there's a real live person who says, what are you here to do? They clarify that they know what their intent is, what they want. Whatever counter is all right there. So when you walk in that door, every department is represented there, and then so is finance and everything else, the clerks. So you don't have to go anywhere. You walk in.
Some long walks in that old City Hall complex.
And going up and down, if you had to go from one to the other and then come back. Yeah. Now it's all right there. But more importantly, when our receptionist takes your name, they take your first name, then you sit down and we have a screen that puts your name up there and it's like in yellow for which service you're looking to access. Mm-hmm. And then when it turns green, you go up to the counter and do your business. Mm-hmm. And if anybody did the old system, people would be queuing up three or four back. And, you know, it was just a very uncomfortable and very unsuccessful model for customer service. Now it's all individualized, and we're cross-training. So because we have all those departments there, mm-hmm. we can cross-train staff. So if we get a run in one area, someone can walk over right next to them and help deal with that. And then the way we designed it, right behind, because it's like a horseshoe counter, behind is the penetration into the next layer of staff that would engage the public. Mm-hmm. So if you have an issue that needs a little, you know, our frontline person needs to bring someone out, they're just right behind there.
Yeah. Are there still some things to be done? Renovations, remodeling, anything?
No, we're all done. Okay. I mean, I don't want to spend all our time on this, but let me give you an idea of the dynamic here. City Hall is 950,000 square feet, okay? Mm-hmm. And we did not have an efficiency there. So this is 10,000 square feet less, and yet we were able to move everything from City Hall. Then we moved in CDTV group, HR group,
So you consolidated from some of the other buildings.
And we still have over 20,000 square feet, almost 25,000 square feet we're not occupying.
Maybe enough for Dearborn Public Schools someday.
That was the original plan. Won't go there anymore. But it was the original plan. We were going to condominiumize, so they don't part, part, and so on.
Yeah,
that was the proposal. But anyway... So, but one of the things that we'll probably do is we're working on joint dispatch with several communities around us, and so we probably, you know, and no one has the capacity right now. So that's one of the things we're looking at is putting that still won't fill it up, but we'll put the joint dispatch.
It's always good to have more space. Everybody knows who owns a house is more space is better than less.
Grow into
it does fill up usually with stuff, unfortunately, but it's good to have that other potential. And of course, operating costs we know will be much less.
$450,000 a year minimum.
Yeah.
Every year.
Wow. Savings.
But already we're seeing that may be exceeded in reality.
Well, so especially with what you said about going from a larger building to a smaller building and still having this space left over with the efficiency, that's all in the planning. So clearly that's what made the difference here.
Yeah. And we were able to, you know, Ford Land, because they downsized, in 2009 and 2010, they had all this furniture, carrels and things, that they donated to us because they had no reuse and so on. So we are, with the open format, you can have a lot more cost-effective use of space.
I came to the open house a couple of weeks ago, except it didn't happen. It was canceled, and it wasn't on the website that it was canceled.
Uh-oh.
And, of course, I read your website really closely, okay, and probably most people wouldn't have mentioned it. No, there was no press release about it, nothing in the papers, but I saw it was mentioned once, and it was still there, so I came by and... Everything's locked up. So I'm told...
Maybe they knew you were coming.
I know. Just, you know. So I don't want to be conspiracy theorist, but I'm sure there's...
Jake, come on over.
Very good reason.
I'll give you the tour.
They said it was a Goodfellow conflict meeting. Everybody had to go to the Goodfellows meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Goodfellow. I think I'm a Goodfellow, but people tell me, but still.
Are you planning an open house?
Yeah, we're trying to work it around where, you know, around like... when the council or whatever's there, you know, so we have staff there at night and that, rather than make it a separate thing. But like I said,
because I think it'd be really good information, even though it's easy to utilize the services of the facility. Yeah. As you said, it's designed for that, but still to see CDTV, set up and the plans for that, I'm sure it'd be great. So we're looking forward to that whenever.
Okay.
You talked about the city has aggressive programs to purchase and rehab houses. About how many you think has been done? I know because there were some houses that were vacant. We don't want that to go into terrible blight situations. But.
Well, what we did, we actually started with buying the low-hanging fruit. So this would be stuff that under forfeiture, the county treasurer takes it. And then we're offered to buy it from the county treasurer for what their costs were.
Okay.
So we've bought probably close to 500 properties now that we purchased for very little money. But the majority of them were torn down because they were not worth saving.
Sure.
And
but still, the property has great value, and it seems to be going up incrementally. So.
Well, what we're doing is trying what I call our 25-year plan. And what we're doing is, when I became mayor, we had never had a restriction on what was the smallest size lot you could build on.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were first built out in the East End, parts of the East End had 30-foot wide lots. They were platted 35 foot.
Mm-hmm.
They had two-story stick-built homes, wood homes, and they were there just to get lots of factory workers into homes, in a fairly quick order. But they really have no future in terms of demand. And they're all over. They're scattered around in Detroit and downriver and all that. So we said, look, those homes are not going to be an asset to us over the long run. So I said, nothing can be built on a property that's less than 40 feet wide, because that gives you a house and a driveway to get the cars off the street. And all those places I talked about are in neighborhoods where you don't want to start down that block, because if somebody comes the other way, it's gridlock. There's nowhere to go.
Well, it's great you had that in the plans
So what we've done is we've sold the majority of those. So we've sold side yard to the neighbors. So 30-foot lots become 45-foot lots. A lot of lots were originally platted at 35. They're 52.5-foot lots. So we're creating larger lots in those neighborhoods that I talked about. That allows, and we're looking at now, incentives to incent people to put the driveways in to do this. Okay. But what that would mean is getting those cars off the road, and people could add a family room. So those homes could begin to be more desirable.
Absolutely. Or
at the lower end, somebody might actually say, well, now if I have a 52.5-foot lot, I'm going to tear down the original home, because again, they were stick built for the most part, and put up the home I want. And so we've seen in other neighborhoods where there were wider lots, a lot of people have chosen to build new homes or whatever. So this is sort of a long-term strategy, but it's been working very well. But we've rehabbed rehabbed 12 homes at this point that were structurally sound. So we had them evaluated. And then we do it under a program where they're actually sold under the first time home buyer's property.
Okay.
And so it works good.
Great. Just jumping around, we did talk about the future open house for the new City Hall, Dearborn Administrative Center. Just FYI, folks, because the show is always very current, next, I guess it's Tuesday, April 21st, there's going to be as it's described here in the press release, a festive kickoff event for the Art Space City Hall Lofts. It's not going to be in the old City Hall.
Yeah,
but
because it's a construction
site.
Right.
But still, if people want to have more information about what's happening, or if they're artists considering maybe becoming part of that, and that's going to be in the Ford Community Performing Arts Center?
Studio A at Ford Community Performing
and,
Arts
Center. And the time, if you remember, 6 p.m. or something?
I believe.
7? Anyway, so
yes.
Check the cityofdearborn.org website, folks. Has the updated calendar on it. Okay. One of the big things you said was, and this is quite serious, of course, the city continues to, in your State of the City address, city continues to be hurt by Proposition A. City revenues won't return to pre-recession levels for another 10 years. And I just picked some key sentences there. Even then, you said inflation is taking its toll each year. So my question is, what's to be done? We currently have a sort of supplemental millage that people approved after the crisis in 2008, when the property values went down and didn't have the funds for the city. You think, what year does that run out, 2016?
Or 2017.
2017.
End of June.
You know the day exactly.
Yeah, June 30th. Of course I do, because I've projected my budget with and without an extension.
Well, you think we may have to reinstate that or find some other funding solution, of course.
If we don't have that revenue, it's a huge change in the dynamic of what services we can offer and so on. It just happens, because that's a very substantial amount. Mm-hmm. And we project that if we were to stay at the same level of service after that expired, in the third year, we'd be behind. We'd have no cash reserve anymore, and we'd be behind. And this is something that's hitting every city in the state. Birmingham is complaining about it as much as we are and everyone else, because what it's done is it's created an artificial way that property values under the Property Value Act are done. And therefore, in past recessions, once the recession was over, and the last one, 79 to 84, we had to defer maintenance, make a lot of cuts, but then we were able to recapture and rebuild. Mm-hmm. We won't be able to do that. We had areas in our city that went up by 20%, 15% in terms of value in 1 year.
Right.
We're capped at 1.6%.
Right.
So the amount of revenue is not even related to the value of the homes anymore, and that's what property tax is.
I know, at least in terms of highway repairs, our legislature seems gridlocked right now, but there's really no chance of doing anything about Proposition A, is there? I mean, that would take a vote of the people, wouldn't it?
Oh, changing it?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Actually.
That's the thing. Once you put something in a constitution, but let me just say, there's a good example. People are saying special interests. There's no special interest. The Constitutional Convention that we had in 1963, which gave us essentially the constitution we're living with today, it was decided that the state would go into the business of collecting statewide sales tax. In return, they committed that cities like Dearborn, Detroit, Flint, everybody who was already collecting sales tax, remember the local governments collected sales tax before the state did, we had to give up. We were prohibited from having sales tax anymore. In return, we were guaranteed 1/8 of the capture of the state's tax. That's revenue sharing. Hello. It's in the Constitution. So it's no, you know, that's what it is. And so this is to try and cure that. This proposal seems complicated because it's dealing with some long-term issues. Because again, when we did Proposal A in 1994, when we adopted that, we also then went and said that a percent of the sales tax would go to the school aid funding, okay? Constitution.
That's what we said.
Nobody can change it, right? So those two things are why the money that was paid for roads, but under the sales tax, was going somewhere else. The Constitution demanded it, and nobody could change it. So what the governor has worked on, which a supermajority of both chambers put before us for a vote, I want to remind you because that a lot of people aren't getting that, is a proposal that says, we're going to make the road money that you spend all go to roads and transportation, and we're going to create a new 1% sales tax for those other things, which is probably the way it should have been done in the first place. Yeah, now, people may not want to do it, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah, to be clear, this Proposition 1, we'll come back for sort of a summary of that hopefully at the end, but that Proposition 1, you think, could make up for some of the other funding issues of Proposition A has caused.
No, not. It won't make it worse. No, this is the old thing of the Monty Python thing.
Right.
Worse? How could it get worse?
So we're pretty much stuck. My point was, we're pretty much stuck with Proposition A.
Unless the voters. That's the thing about constitutional amendments.
Right.
They can only be changed by the voters, and so I'm glad you brought it up. It doesn't make things better. It just doesn't make them worse.
Okay. Well, we're going to get back to Proposition 1, which is the May 5th election. How about these local roads? Now, this may have to do with Proposition 1, too, because there's some money, if passed, that would come back to the cities to help repair some of the roads in the cities. Almost doubling funding, at least I saw the Dearborn Heights numbers. We had a city assessor on here a couple weeks ago. So
they're on a population basis, so they're all going to, everybody's going to benefit according to the population.
Okay, all right. Let me just jump around here. Let's see. Police. It's a big topic, how police are treating the public and or not. Of course, I try to remind people on the show that the media will take an event from maybe one small town, maybe not even in this country, and all of a sudden it's a major issue for a long time. And what's the, and of course there was this event in Inkster a couple weeks ago, but our police department, as you mentioned in your speech, was honored last October by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Interesting, the two awards, the first one was for commitment to civil rights, and the other was for contributions to the quality of life in the community. I love quality of life. It's one of my favorite things. Whenever possible. But who is the IACP? They're international.
International Chiefs of Police.
Yeah, but are they based in like London or France? Or
I'm not sure where.
Okay, but we had some arguments to make. Things happened in terms of civil rights. You remember one or two of the reasons we got that award?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. What we did in 2007 was we embarked on a program to transform how we conduct our business out in the street. And we tracked it, so it's data-driven. So we decided we were going to reduce the use of force, we're going to reduce the use of guns, we're going to reduce the use of tasers, we're going to create dialogue with the community. These were all commitments we made, and then we set up a way that we could measure and track that to track our progress. And you really should have the chief on to talk about this.
Well, I intend to, in fact,
it's,
in a couple
it's really
weeks,
extraordinary, and in fact, now the Department of Homeland Security has put him on a board in Washington, and they're replicating some of the things we did around major cities. But we've gone the exact opposite direction of what seems to be the trend. And some of it was just getting down to how were tasers issued, who was issued them, what was their training. Well, we found that there was the people weren't trained, so on. So we changed the system. We said nobody gets a taser unless they go through a full set of training.
That's a good idea.
That the only number of tasers that go out is one per beat. And so only one person in each beat has one, so we can use it if necessary, but it's not a tool of choice. But the other thing is we did a lot of training with sensitivity, with working with issues, working with people who have disabilities, those kinds of things, because those are some of the things that start.
Yeah, we hear about that in the media. From the other areas, they don't have that, but we've been working on that for the last several years.
Yeah, we've been working for several years training people to recognize that some people may have may behave oddly or behave resistantly, but it's not intentional in the sense that they're just doing it deliberately, but it has to do with an issue that they confront every day.
Sure.
So that's been very helpful. So our police have been amazing, and the union has been amazing, but we've been working on transforming the relationship between the police. Each police officer has made like 300 visits to the schools on their beat. They go through, not just for events, just to walk through, be seen, see how things are going. So we're creating those relationships. We have a group that was really initiated through some of the advocacy groups in town called Bridges. Now, this is another one that's being now replicated around the country. We've been doing it for about 7 years, but it was really these groups that said, look, if you want us to work with you, you've got to listen to us. So Bridges is an opportunity about every 2 months where advocacy groups for different suspect classes or representing Arab Americans or whatever sit and have lunch with officials from government, from the federal, state, and local government in Dearborn. We go to the Lebanese American Heritage Club is where we actually have the lunch. And we have dialogue on an ongoing basis. Now, when I look at what's going on around the country, we see that there isn't trust. Well, we've spent 7 years building trust. So these advocacy groups know that they have a place to have dialogue. They know who to talk to. They've developed relationships. We've talked through a lot of issues. We continue to work through them. So that's one of the tools. The other tool is the faith-based group. And that's another group that we've cultivated and work with, where our faith leaders, and they're great, they're from all faiths, and they even bring in a chaplain who's one of our police chaplains who's Jewish, and we have regular meetings on a regular basis.
This is the Dearborn Area Interfaith Network.
Yes.
Yeah, you mentioned them in the speech, but I wasn't sure who that was.
And again, this is where you build trust and you get communication going, and those are the ways in which you are able to have things are going to go wrong. There's no way with human beings that there won't be mistakes, things won't go wrong. And the question is, when they go wrong, how does everybody react? If there are relationships and there's trust, people sit down, work through it, and deal with it.
I'm sure we have some video cameras already, but body cameras are not the answer alone to any of these things.
All you'll know is what happened. You have a better idea what happened.
As a telecom person, I want to hear the sound too, but then I'll say, well, it's not good enough sound. Where's the boom? Is it close enough? Well, you can't have a documentary crew out with you.
Right.
And even then, they're not going to see what's behind them, right?
But see, there's the point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because this is what everybody's missing. Okay, even if our people had body cameras and you had all that, but we didn't do the training, we didn't do the background work, we didn't work with community leaders and activists, if we didn't do that, then the camera's just going to show how stupid you were. I mean, it's evidence. Yeah, somebody screwed up. My point is, I don't think there's any way in the realm of human behavior that people aren't going to do something wrong or to make mistakes. But training and giving people confidence and having people know that they have a venue to address things that are of concern is going to mitigate the tensions, the emotions, and it's the aftermath of these events that have been phenomenally bad for everyone.
Sure.
I mean, Ferguson, for a town their size, they just got blown apart. They became, the Mecca. People were coming from all over to be part of whatever they perceived was going on there. But how did that help the community? I mean, it didn't. And so, yeah, an event happened, but it's really laying the groundwork ahead of time. And then we are actually looking at having cameras, just because at some point somebody's going to say, well, you have to have it, just like we have the video cameras in the cars.
Right.
So I don't have any problem with that. And that the one thing it might do is have the accountability if somebody knows that they're creating evidence.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you saw that thing about that ESPN person who railed on somebody when they were picking up their car that was did you see it this morning?
I'm not into sports.
No, it wasn't on sports. This was on TV. She's a on air person for them, and she went in to pay for her car to get it because it had been towed and impounded.
Oh.
And she just goes off terribly on this person working in the thing, and the person said, "You know, I've got you on camera," and she didn't stop. It's unbelievable.
She's used to the cameras.
Yeah,
right?
when you see it, you won't believe it. But the point is, it's too late once you go off. The point is, let's do the training, do the education,
that's the core.
Stress, and see what our police department can feel proud, because now we have data going over a longitudinal period that shows the success of what we've done. Lawsuits. We used to have lawsuits all the time. We went without any lawsuits in a year. We haven't lost a lawsuit or been successfully sued, which used to be the norm. So there's so many other benefits when you get it right, and it's still in act. I admit it's in progress, so it's never done.
Sure.
But we've turned a corner to move in a different direction, and we did it with a lot of consciousness, and now we're being replicated. And this was really the chief and his and our whole police department. But now we're being recognized nationally for the fact that we took the initiative.
Right. And it really sounds like the difference here is that sort of philosophical mindset of proactive versus reactive,
right,
in a nutshell.
We're going to take a quick break in just a second, but maybe, or a couple seconds. I noticed you had mentioned that in your State of the City address, we're working closely with Ford Motor Company as it begins a major reinvestment in its research and engineering complex. I'm just wondering, in what ways? Are they getting more land? Do they want code changes? Or tax credits, I bet they want.
No, none of that. So
no?
You want to get in when we come back, we can get into it, or you want to do it now?
Well, I mean, no, if it's none of those, then I have no problem.
Well, so. I just want you to know.
Well, I
want to
know now.
I've had high anxiety for probably almost 2 years because we knew that Ford knew it had to. It was behind its competitors in terms of the facilities they used for product development and so on, because they were the oldest one.
They were outsourcing a lot, too, and then they sort of forgot about that. Like, their audio department was outsourced, and then now they don't really have anything
themselves. So here's the thing. We knew they were evaluating what they were going to do to be positioned to be successful in the future. And we also knew that while Dearborn was being considered as rebuilding here, but their footprint is already defined, and we were worried about them moving to a green space or somewhere else. But, you know, that was their decision, and we had no way of knowing until they announced. But when they announced, what they had decided is they're going to rebuild here, which means they're going to be a little more expensive.
That's
because they're going to have to build parking decks.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to go up, which means if you drive steel, that's a much bigger cost. But they've made the commitment to Dearborn, and it's already started.
That's great.
And what that means for us is that we're going to see this group of highly talented professionals and people in this, you know, kind of state-of-the-art crafts that are developing all these things coming to Dearborn. And what it creates for us is, if we can create a supporting environment, then we can get the value added from that of having them live here, recreate here, all that sort of thing. And we're working with Ford Motor Land, who's on board with that, because to recruit these people, some of these people have lifestyle choices. They want to live in a certain way and have a certain amenities available. So we're working with them to see how we can transform Dearborn into the kind of place that will be attractive to the people that Ford's trying to attract.
You're getting back some of the 10,000 jobs that were lost.
Well, thank you, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. It's a chance to grow the workforce.
Ford had to make those cuts at the time, you know, but we lost them.
Right. And so in this case, you know, now we know they're on the track to get the best and brightest.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is do all the things we can within the city of Dearborn to be attractive to those best and brightest.
We're going to talk more about the best and the brightest with the best and the brightest mayor we've got here.
The Don only
O'Reilly
mayor.
Jenner. Oh, that's just the way it works. I say that about my daughter and my granddaughters, too, that they're the best daughters and granddaughters, my favorite ones. And, of course, they're my only ones, but, you know. Okay. We've got our special 30th anniversary gala coming up tomorrow night. And, of course, Radiothon 2015 continues. And these pre-recorded messages by us will fill you in on that. Just 2 minutes, and we'll be back with more questions from Mayor O'Reilly.
If you're a loyal listener, this is the biggest event in 3 decades. It's WHFR's 30th anniversary gala, April 18th at Park Place Banquet Hall at Outer Drive and Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. The gala is from 6 to 11 p.m. All ages are welcome. Tickets are $50 per person, including a full buffet dinner and open bar. Dance to the swinging blues of R.J. Spangler's Kansas City 6. The special guest, Camille Price. Proceeds go to help raise needed funds for WHFR 89.3 FM. That's WHFR's 30th anniversary gala, April 18th at Park Place Banquet Hall. For more information, contact Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842 or order your tickets online at WHFR.fm. 30 years, and we're just getting started.
Hello, loyal listeners. Our annual pledge drive, Radiothon 2015, is happening now and will continue through Saturday, April 18th. If you enjoy WHFR and all of its diverse genres of music and talk shows without commercial interruption, this is your opportunity to keep this alternative programming on the air. WHFR receives over 60% of its operating funds from listeners like yourself. So this is it. This is the time to make your pledge. And as our special thanks, we have some new incentive gifts available too. Call the studio with your pledge right now at 313-845-9676, option 1, or you can pledge online at WHFR.fm. WHFR, 30 years and we're just getting started. Let's do it together.
We were just talking with Mayor John B. O'Reilly before the break, and one of the things that came up in his speech, of course, about all the West Dearborn business developments and end of paid parking and lots and the towers, new businesses opening there. That's all very exciting. I haven't got to all of them. One of my favorite was the Peacock Indian Grill from many years ago. I assume it's the same management.
Well, we're trying to find out. Actually, it won't be much higher. The two people, the man and wife who ran it, he unfortunately passed, and it wouldn't be her, but it could be the daughter. Their daughter ran a wonderful restaurant at the International Institute across from the DIA, and she ran that for many years, and then she moved out of the area, but she is a restaurateur and a cook and so on. So
it's giving us more diversity, a wider range of food.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Not just burgers and Italian, although we love Italian, Susan?
Yeah, I love Italian.
There you go.
The Peacock was an amazing draw because it brought people from all over the metropolitan area, so I'm hoping that it'll be at that level.
And you just did the ribbon cutting at the Harbor Freight Tools Michigan Avenue there.
Yeah, I didn't even know about Harbor Freight, and going in there, and I was amazed. I mean, it's got an incredible inventory, although it's really got great, because I guess the products, they have guarantees because they make themselves and so on, but the thing that was impressive is this is some high-powered tools. I mean, many of them are beyond my capacity.
A specialized hardware store, would you say?
Yeah, I would say it is. It's got a broad scope and it's huge. The interior, when you go in, it's huge. But you know, it has screwdrivers, all that sort of thing. But it has a lot of really, let's say, tools that go out on the weekend and just get it done. Some tools that I wouldn't even know how to begin to use.
How to turn them on, right? that's wonderful.
And you mentioned the new app that was developed with the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce called Discover Dearborn. Yeah. I downloaded it today on my iPhone here. And except for the events section, there's only 2 events coming up. Too bad.
You got to post yours.
Well, there you go. That's wonderful. And in the Eats section, we've still got Pizzapopolis, and unfortunately they left West Dearborn.
Yeah.
But work in progress. It takes a lot to manage this. I assume that the Chamber is trying to keep on top of it because things change daily, especially with the new things happening and so on. But that's great. It's free, folks. You just go to your app store, wherever that is, in the virtual reality, and just download it. I assume that there's Android versions, too, available, of course. Yep. Yes, all right. One of the things that came up before, and I guess I can sum it up here, and folks, you remember the story about West Dearborn development, and when Mayor Guido was had all the plans and working out all these different things. Well, part of that was never developed. It was promised by a company called Burton Katzman, and the city of Dearborn has been suing them. It must be 10 years or more now.
Oh, yeah.
It's been going on for failing to complete the promised development. And I'm thinking that's $10 or $20 million value, maybe.
Well, the value is $22 million of the two buildings. So there were three phases, but the contract was that if the city built the decks, they would have to complete all three phases because the tax capture from that investment would pay the debt on the decks. So what happens is, and people can take this any way they want, to incent them to do this, we're saying that, okay, you're still going to have to pay taxes. You're not getting a break on the taxes. But all the tax we collect from your property will first be used to pay the debts on the decks we had to build to support your property. That's how it worked. So when they didn't build two seven-story buildings, one was supposed to be a hotel and one was supposed to be an office space. When they failed to do that and then failed to come up with any alternative that would have similar value, and just basically walked away, we sued them to say, wait a minute, we performed under the contract properly the way we were supposed to. You now are obligated to perform. Well, that went through all kinds of iterations. We went through courts, and what happened is they had 83, I think, different LLCs, and we only one of them had no contracts, and we didn't have a contract with, but it was all the same parties. So we sought to have the court rule that that entity, Burton Share Management, was one and the same and therefore should be held responsible. And the trial court did a great job, built a great record, and they did agree. So Burton Katzman appealed it to the appeals court. The appeals court on 2-1 decision said, no, we don't think so. And they kind of started in my mind, this is my opinion, they were changing the facts that were determined by the trial court, which I don't think should happen.
Yeah.
So we're appealing and we're pending appeal right now at the Supreme Court of Michigan.
How many more years will that take?
You know what?
How do they assess the agendas? I mean, do they?
Well, it's voluntary on their part.
Oh, okay. So they get to decide the bigger questions.
At some point, after a brief review, they will decide whether it has merit to be taken up or not.
Well, that just shows again it's a long view for cities, even businesses. There's a short view certainly, but the long view is the most important one certainly for the sake of Dearborn and. Good for city. Keep going there. I think that's worthwhile. If we can shift to from the State of the City address, and that was very informative, but as you said, things are still happening, and that was way back in February, and this is April. Right now, we're in the midst of some budget discussions about fiscal year 2015-2016 budget in the city, where the public can come in and hear presentations from people in the city, but also give input at that point, too. This coming Monday, April 20th, folks, infrastructure at 6 p.m. in the Dearborn Administrative Center.
Right.
Infrastructure is roads and...
Oh, everything. Buildings.
Everything.
You know,
oh, well.
Business districts. I mean, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it's a fairly broad. But, you know, again, while we divide them into different topics, at the end of the day, you know, the council, formally, according to the charter... We start the process way before, but formally, according to the charter, on April 15th, I turn over to the council the budget as I finally propose it after our other dialogue.
Okay.
Then it's now their budget.
So you've already done that.
You did that. So now it's their budget. So now we'll continue to talk about it. And of course, this is where, you know, at the end, they decide, okay, we either are going to accept this budget or we're going to modify the budget or whatever. And it's as likely there may be modifications, which is fine, because that's the way it's supposed to work. But the ultimate decision, and I did this for 17 years, is the council's decision on what we should spend and how much we spend. So I recommend what I think is appropriate in the budget, and then the council has the final say, which is the way it should be. I mean, I have no problem. And then that sets up what we could do. The other thing, though, is, and people should be aware, this sets the budget so we can begin operating, because the current budget ends at the end of June, last day of June. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have approval to spend money the first day of July, we can't run government. So, but the council always has the opportunity during the budget year to amend the budget, okay? So that's one of the other things. And they did that last year midstream to put some more emphasis in cleanup of business districts and so on. But that's not, that's just part of the process.
Well, let's just mention, I'll mention briefly the next, after the infrastructure on April 20th, 6 p.m., Dearborn Administrative Center. Monday, April 27th, Library and Historical Museum issues. Monday, May 4th, Neighborhood Services, Rental Properties, Building and Safety Outsourcing. Wednesday, May 6th, Swimming Pools. The swimming people find Wednesdays better for them?
I had
another activity going on that Monday, maybe. And of course, the council, after these sessions, will start discussing it in their meetings.
Yeah, it wasn't just pools. It's recreation. So
all recreation, right.
So
okay.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Well, speaking of pools, we see as we drive by Michigan Avenue that they're filling in Lake Guido. Okay, bad joke. I know Mayor Guido never wanted to call that. I think the Dearborn Press and Guide came up with that because they thought it was a boondoggle. They thought it was a terrible little affectation that he wanted a pool out there, which always was losing water. But it turns out, as I read the wonderful press release from the city, the whole story on that was they actually needed the dirt. I guess it was heavy-duty clay from the ground there elsewhere to help support the building of the Ford Performing and Community Arts Center.
Yeah.
Like, it's heavy-duty dirt.
Right.
Okay, but it's interesting, when they took that out of there, didn't leave such a good pond.
No.
Because the dirt that's left there keeps caving in, too, as well as leaking out the water.
Yeah. We're in Michigan, of course, the land of lakes. We have a high water table, and so we try to contain it. But we were spending way too much money trying to maintain it, for one thing. Secondarily, it became completely controlled by an invasive species of plants, which meant that, it was no longer a planned, thing. It was something that had its own course.
There were beautiful reeds, but still, they're invasive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you have a lakefront property around Michigan, in inland lakes especially, I understand it's terrible to get rid of this. And I see that if you would have tried to get all those reeds out of there, $250,000. So, but it's great that, again, working with everybody, talking to everybody, which I know has always been your modus operandi, you found a way to get the dirt to fill it in from the combined sewer overflow project, which is digging up dirt to put in new sewer lines and
it overflow. Actually reduces our cost to get rid of it because it's less, we take less distance.
That's such a novel concept, isn't it? It's wonderful.
I do need a replacement a bike track or improvements on the one around the baseball field, though, because I'm always take my bike there and do bunch of laps.
Oh, at the
Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Performing
arts.
I used to, just because it was a shorter little thing and nobody was ever using it, I was always going around the pond.
Right.
On a bike. Well, anyway.
That'll be restored because that's part of the walkway all the way around. It's about 1.5 miles if you go the full distance.
Yeah, don't do it for me. Just make it look nice.
Yeah.
What happened? I thought it was dedicated and there was a donation. It was actually called for a while because I saw the sign Eppinger Pond.
Yes, Eppinger.
Eppinger Manufacturing
our famous
Company.
Manufacturing that makes the Daredevil. But again, we just, they donated.
Put his name on something else.
They donated some money for us to go and try and put in a new liner and use that. Yeah. And we did that, but it really wasn't that successful.
Well.
So it's just like we tried to save the fountain. And we had put $250,000 into the fountain.
Crazy,
And it just, the underwash, had contaminated everything, and you really would have to just replace it, and that's now going to become the Veterans Plaza. So we've got agreement between the Allied War Veterans Council and the Library Commission that we're going to redo the Michigan Avenue frontage of the library, and it'll become the new Veterans Memorial.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So. Very nice.
Well, we want to do a quick summary. What's good about Proposal 1 on the May 5th election ballot for Dearborn? So, I mean, people have to decide if they want to pay more sales tax, first right. of all, if that's good for them, but they want to know if it's going to a good purpose. And, of course, that information is out there. You said you've provided already information that's going to be on the website? About
yes, I decided.
Background on it?
What I did is, I'm not advocating, and my point is just that it's hard for people to really know the truth. And here's one of the things, for example. I talked already about the other, but in addition to what I already talked about, one of the things that people didn't know is that our leaders in government at the state level did something that nobody was paying attention to, including me. I didn't know this until very recently. Twice they bonded against the money that was collected for the roads. Mm. And I mm-hmm. was yeah. shocked when I learned this.
I never heard that either.
I know. In 1997 was the first time. And let me give you an example, because, you know, Lansing is a curious place at times.
Yeah.
Okay, 1997, they did an analysis, and everybody agreed that they needed to spend 11 cents more a year on roads. So they decided to raise the tax. And so they raised it by only 4 cents, and then they bonded at the level to do the work at 12 cents. So now the money that you're paying isn't going for the roads you're going to build next. It's bills already done. Then 10 years later, different administration did the same thing, only they didn't raise it at all. They just bonded. So all of a sudden, a large portion of the money for years and years and years now has been going to pay debt on work done before yeah. instead of keeping pace. So we fell further and further behind. And that's a reality. So now the question is, if not this, what? This does not give anybody more money except the roads. The roads will substantially get more money. Schools and municipalities just keep what they've been getting. But the big thing is it fixes it. Sales tax is only for the things that should be of sales tax. The gas tax is only for things that should be of the gas tax. And anybody who's talking about other solutions, I'd like them to give me a clear idea of exactly how they're going to execute it. Because first of all, one of the things is there's money somewhere, we'll get it from another source. This has been an issue for 30 years because we have not kept pace on our roads. I just documented 2 decades ago we were floundering. It's not going to be solved easily, and if it's easy as taking money from somewhere else, it would have happened already. And then, you know, you have like people talking about, you know, using, you know, the state catastrophic fund. That's in the Constitution, too. And that's what I don't understand. These people didn't realize they're talking special needs. Read your Constitution. Yeah. You work for us in Lansing. Read your Constitution and understand it. Because their failure to understand the Constitution is why they're making up this stuff about special interests and all that. So I just think, here's the deal. It doesn't matter. If you really don't want to do it, don't. Vote against. I want people to vote. Whether they vote against it or yes. not, I want them to vote.
Yes, they need
but
to
the problem is, understand then, that the challenge doesn't go away and the solutions don't get any easier.
Thank you so much, Mayor O'Reilly. Yes, the WHFR Journal has to make way for Highway 61, the best in blues, and it's our Radiothon Pledge Day coming up right now. Thank you, Susan McGraw, for sitting in, even though you knew with Mayor O'Reilly you wouldn't get too much chance to
But I got a front
much,
row seat, and that's
yes,
worth it right there.
You get to see the mayor hard at work explaining
Absolutely.
Himself. So your summary, again, is on the website,
yes,
cityofdearborn.org.
Pretty much what I just went through with
great.
A little extra.
Well, okay,
and, of course, you have the SEMCOG.org. Mm-hmm. SEMCOG is a wonderful, unbiased group that has just put facts on.
All right.
And if you really want to look at facts that just present it fairly, go